Hi, and welcome to the Courageous Heart for Visionary Entrepreneur series. This series is about developing and maintaining a connection with your heart, your passion, and your joy for your business and your life. Maintaining a value-centered life with our passions at the core can be difficult. It takes courage to be present with fear that arises in going towards what we love. I'm so excited to have Michael Tamura here today because he teaches with such heart and deep wisdom, and I know he'll offer some very inspiring and insightful advice for us. So please set aside anything else you're doing, and I'll take you through a little meditation practice to help bring you fully present to drop in for all of the amazing information Michael will be sharing about his journey in life and business with a connection to spirit and the heart. So take a deep breath and fill it up into your heart. Breathe out and imagine that breath radiating out from your heart. Another breath into the heart. And let it out, radiating your light outward. Okay. So I'm going to just give a little bit about Michael Tamura. Michael Tamura lives the miracle. Spiritually aware from childhood, he sees everyone the way they are as immortal souls to guide thousands to their healing, awakening, and true life purpose. He draws from years of intensive training, profound past life recall, nightly out of the body teaching sojourns, which I'm going to start joining you for. That sounds awesome. And a lifetime of extraordinary experiences, including having physically died twice in full consciousness. He is beloved around the world as a spiritual teacher, visionary clairvoyant, and pioneer of healing and psychic development. And he has been featured on CNN, NBC's The Lisa Show, Bridging Heaven and Earth, The Aware Show, Hay House Radio, World Puja Network, and many other media programs. He was also included in ABC News' The Century, America's Time with Peter Jennings. Today, the award-winning author of You Are the Answer continues to illuminate the way for many awakening souls through his acclaimed seminars, teleseminars, writing, media appearances, products, and special events. And we're going to give a little bit more info at the end about a special event that Michael has coming up January 21st and 22nd in Longmont, so stay tuned. That'll be at the end. And for Michael, every step of life offers an opportunity for healing, miracles, and the fulfillment of one's divine purpose. So, Michael, I know you from the lectures I've attended of yours in Longmont over the last few years.
Yeah.
And I knew it seemed important to come see you when all the teachers, the intuitive reading and energy work in the area, were going to your workshop. I figured the teacher's teacher is likely has some great information. I love your style of humor and insight, and I'll always leave your workshop or talk with some profound insight I carry forward to help me as a healer and coach. So thanks so much for joining us today. Welcome.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me on your show, Lisa. It's great.
Definitely.
So what would you like to talk about today?
Well, my first question, I have a few. So I love your topic of the journey from the head to the heart and from the body to living as a fully intuitive soul. Mm-hmm. I believe this is just as important as in life as in business. And so since this event is for entrepreneurs, could you give any advice on coming from the heart versus the head in business, since this is where we can easily lose our heart-based focus?
Well, first of all, what is really the nature of business? It's service, isn't it? And so when you say that coming from the heart is equally important for business as well as in general life, it's very much true, because the whole nature of business, even though a lot of businesses may not practice that, it is really to serve, isn't it? I mean, what else would business be for? So every business, whether it's producing a product or service or whatever it is that the business is about, first and foremost, it's not about making money as the focus. It's about providing the service of what people need, whether it's in a small community or a global community. And so then, if we're coming from just an intellectual perspective in running a business, you can have all the right figures, you can have all the right formulas and strategies and the whole bit, but ultimately it's not going to work. Unfortunately, in our world, we have a lot of businesses that seem to be focused strictly on how to make more money, how to squeeze every little penny out of everybody, and that's the central focus, even though they may actually be providing something as well. Of course, nobody's going to spend money on something that doesn't give them any kind of a benefit, so there has to be value there. But where is that value coming from? Well, the other day, I was reminded by somebody of what the Constitution for the Iroquois Nation had in it is the elders that look to make the decisions for their community are required to look down seven generations down the line to see how the decisions we're making today are going to affect seven generations down the line.
Mm. Oh, I love that reminder.
Yeah, that's what, 100 to 150 years down the line we're looking at. Our children's, you know, all along the line. How are they going to be affected by the decisions I'm making today? And so what does that really mean? That means the person who makes that kind of a decision has to come from not only their heart, but what coming from the heart really means is coming from the soul, who you are as a spiritual being. So at this point, a lot of businesses are not run that way. It's run according to market studies, according to, you know, polls, according to statistics, economics, and so forth and so on. It's all based on the body. If it's based on the world, it's based on the body and mind. And this big shift that everyone's talking about, and especially now that we're actually living in 2012, the big shift is really fundamentally a shift from living an intellectual body-based life and shifting to an intuitive soul-centered life. And
I like that. So it sounds like you're saying that when we relate just to our physical needs and our body, we get lost in more of the spiritual path that we're on.
Exactly. And we are all spirit, regardless. Even the atheist is spirit. They just don't call it that. And if you've ever died or can recall your death, whether in this lifetime or in another lifetime, I can say that because I've been dead three times now.
Right, in this one, right?
In this one.
Yeah.
And I think that's enough. I wouldn't recommend it.
For,
I'll have to say, you know, the disclaimer is, I'm a professional, please don't try this at home kind of a thing. But or you could even recall your last past life death in another incarnation. Well, whatever it is, what happened afterwards? Well, you continued on. And every soul recognizes this. And if you don't recognize it during your incarnational life, then you will recognize it once you no longer have a body here and you're not on Earth anymore. And you go, oh, I still am. I'm here. And so then when you look down seven generations, you're actually looking down at your future incarnations. You're taking care not only of your children and their children and their great, you know, grandchildren and all of that, but you're taking care of yourself in your next incarnations.
Hmm. Wow, that's pretty powerful. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
So
that's great.
You could even be selfish, and you still have to look at that. And so what are we doing in business and in our everyday living in terms of serving? In business, we're sharing what we have in abundance. Every business, you know, there's no business that tries to share something they don't have anything of. That would be called fraud. But every business that's an ongoing business is sharing something that they have a lot of. And so then this is what we always do. When we have something, then it's the only thing we can do is share it. Now, one of the things, I know that the entrepreneurs and people who are in business who are listening to this program of yours inevitably has to be spiritually oriented, or else they wouldn't be that interested in listening. And so I'm going to address that group of people because I've seen so many times when a spiritually oriented person, a person who has a heart, because coming from the heart means you're coming from within your soul, and you have certain kind of a sense of what is limitless, what is eternal, what is going to stand the test of time. And as you come from that place, well, if you get wrapped up in the world of business where, yes, when we have a business, we have to pay rent, we have to pay employees, we have to pay our taxes, we have to pay all the bills, and so money is involved. And it's easy to get swept up into that idea that, okay, it's about the money, and I have to have the money or else I can't have this business, no matter how wonderful of a product or service I have to offer people. Well, I still have to pay the bills or else I can't offer it. And so then the focus becomes more and more money, and a lot of people who are more spiritually oriented are interested in, okay, how do you create as a spiritual being? How do you manifest, you know, the law of attraction and all of that stuff that goes around that people really get interested in? And that's great, except if you use all of those so-called laws of the universe or whatever you want to call it, to focus it on, okay, how do I make more money so I can have this business, you're kind of cutting your nose off to spite your face. And what needs to happen is you have to recognize that, yes, there are people in the world who it's all about money. It's they love money more than anything else they can think of. And those people are going to be highly motivated, highly ambitious to make a whole lot of it. No matter what they do, no matter whose toes or hearts or breath they step on. And generally, if you're that dedicated to making money, you're going to make a ton of it. And there are many people in this world who do that. And so then, but that's not the person who's already spiritually oriented and feels that, gee, I have a great service, I have a great product that I would like to share with the world, or at least share with my community, and yet I also need to earn a living. And so I'll make this a business, and you know, it would be an exchange. Well, if that person starts to focus on making money and using the understanding they have of how to manifest creatively toward making more money, well, that's the money's not where their heart is, and so they're not going to really succeed.
Yeah, that's great. The money is not where the heart is. I like that line.
So then, if you know, again, back to the people who do have their heart in money. You know, money is where their heart is, and then they create to make money. They're going to make a lot of it. But if your heart really isn't in money, it's in sharing, it's in what you have to offer, then you can't focus on the money part in creating. You have to be able to focus on what it is that you are sharing and what will it take for you to be able to offer this so that not only the people who you're serving will benefit, but you're also going to benefit by being able to continue to do so. And if we go bankrupt as a business, we're not going to be able to serve. If we become ill of health because we're running ourselves ragged in trying to serve, that's not going to really do well either. I have a model for my students who are interested in healing. I tell them a dead healer is generally no good as a healer.
Especially the hands-on healing, just not good.
That's why, you know, I have to keep on coming back. So anyway, so we have to take care of ourselves as we take care of others. And it goes both ways, which really means coming from the heart means you are whole. Your decisions you make come from wholeness, from limitlessness. Anything that is whole is undivided. And anything that's undivided means it's limitless, it's timeless, it's forever. And so anything that is of spirit, that's where the heart is. You know, it's interesting. Jesus was telling his disciples that where your treasures are, there too will your heart be. What he's saying on one hand is what you center your heart in, what you desire, what you hold in esteem in your heart of hearts, that's where your heart is going to be. What you treasure is where your heart is going to be. And so if you would like to have a business that's centered in the heart, centered in the limitless, you can't get caught up in, oh, gee, I don't have enough money to pay the bills and all that. You have to be aware of it. You have to be aware of the bottom line. You have to be aware of what's in your account and have your budget and do all those things, but you can't be centered in it. You have to be centered where you're going and the limitless. Then all the things that are required for you to be able to produce that, for you to be able to offer that and continue to offer that to others will come along. And so it's called grace. And grace is not something that can be, gotten. You can't go, okay, I'm going to go get some grace. How much is it?
Right.
Yeah, I'll take a dozen.
I might have seen a Pepsi commercial offering grace for a good price, but I don't know. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, well, grace, the nature of grace is it's given effortlessly. So how many times do we go into a tremendous amount of effort in order to give? We know we have something wonderful to offer and share with somebody else, and whether it's one person or a whole community, how often do we get into effort and struggle in order to be able to provide that, to give that? And that's the first clue. If we're in effort, then we have to step back and go, okay, what are we trying so hard? Because that effort comes from going against something.
Hmm.
Grace.
Thank you. I feel like you're speaking to me. This is great. I've come from German Midwestern people. Effort's my middle name. So please
yes.
Go on. This is great.
Yeah. I mean, it's really in our society, effort is instilled in the child. You know, if you don't succeed at first, try harder, right? And so every culture more or less has this instilling of effort in their children because the parents feeling, you know, they want to teach the children to be able to survive. Well, that again is a body-based intellectual society. Survival is at the core. Because when you know you're a soul, you're an immortal soul, you know you're a spiritual being, you're going to be here long after the body's way deep in the graveyard. And you know that. When you know that, then life isn't about how long can I make this body survive. That's just a side benefit. That's just a function of where you're coming from. And as long as the body is in pretty good health to allow you to complete your incarnation here and fulfill what you're here for, then it's great. It did a good job, and thank you very much, and you return it to the earth. But if you forget that you're this immortal soul that has a plan before coming into the incarnation, before being born, we each have a very detailed plan of action in this lifetime. And so if we forget that, then we get lost in all the decisions, worldly decisions about how am I going to survive? How am I going to make it? How am I going to survive? How am I going to keep going? And
mm-hmm.
and when
yeah.
you get... Yes?
I have a question on that,
sure.
if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because that's... Yeah, you're, since you're... You know, the effort thing, I love it. So I do notice that I get into these, especially now because I get that it's in 2012 and as we go on, we're manifesting more and more in the present,
mm-hmm.
Our thoughts, and yet we are tied in. You know, we did come in with a plan. So I don't know if – I don't want to get you off track, but if you could speak a little bit to, you know, how it is that we manifest in the moment and – you know, not that we have a predetermined destiny per se, but that there is a plan that kind of maybe holds the whole thing together?
Yes, that's very simple. It's only in the moment. It's only right now that we have access to what is within us. Because we are, meaning we are limitless. We have no beginning and no end as spirit. And so it's only right now and right here that there is no beginning or end. The minute we go into the future, we're waiting for something. The minute we go into the past, we're thinking it was back there somewhere, and there's a beginning and an end. If we put the limitation of a beginning and an end to our beingness, then we close the door to all that we have within us. But the moment we're here, right now, then we have access to everything, including the plans that we made as souls with the help of our guides and teachers and whatnot. And so if we're struggling and if we're in effort, we're never here now. Do you ever notice when you're when you're in effort, you're not here?
Oh, that's a great distinction. Okay, so
yeah.
When you're in effort, you're not present, yeah.
You're trying to get some. When you're in effort, you're trying to get somewhere else.
Mm.
You don't like where you're at, and so you're trying to get somewhere else. You say, where I'm at is not good enough. Well, that is competition. Anytime we decide that where we are, how we are, what we are, who we are, if any of that is not acceptable right here and now, as we are, then we get ourselves in competition with ourselves. And once we're in competition with ourselves, we divide it, and divide it, we fall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so effort, competition, all of those things that are considered actually good. You know, in business, you're supposed to be competitive. And when the competition starts to come in, then you go, oh, we're going to do better. And the business improves because we're making our product better than theirs and so forth, and people call that healthy competition. And that's okay in the outward sense of it, but you don't have to be in competition to make your product better. Why wasn't it better in the first place? Oh, if I can get by on cutting costs and everything, and nobody will know the difference because nobody else is making anything like this, so I got the corner on the market, and if I'm coming from that place, I'm already in competition. But if I'm coming from my heart, my soul, then I'm going, is this what I'm here for? Am I here to try to cut corners and try to make as much money as possible for what? I can't take it with me when I die, right? So in spirit, there's no place for money, but here we do need the money to run our business and everything, and that's just part of the formula. And so it's not to be poor. That's not the idea of being spiritual or heart-centered. It's to be able to have all the resources we need, whether it's money, time, people, health, information, communication, whatever it is that we need to be able to share. And we don't need more than that, and it's not good to have less than that. It's just what's appropriate, what's correct. And so in many ways I've learned not to be worried. There was a time for 18 years I was the director of a psychic institute that had many branches in all over California, and at the height of it I had about 250 people on my staff and 450 volunteer staff, and so that's a lot to deal with, And every day, somebody would be asking me, are we going to be able to make all the bills? Are we going to be able to pay everything off this month? Are we going to be able to pay all the employees and everything? And if I were a normal business person, you know, relying on what the accountants were telling me, the answer most of the time would be no.
Fascinating, yeah.
We're not going to make it to the end of the month.
Right, if you're looking linearly. Well, that's actually great to hear, so that there must have been some other thing you were tapped into.
Exactly. And so, but this went on almost every month, and after some years of it, the controller of the organization finally, you know, said, well, I don't know what you do, but it's going to happen, and so I'm just going to not bother asking.
And, thank you.
Yes, and if I had to explain to somebody, how do I do this? Well, there's no complicated answer in terms of I can't outline for them you do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and it's going to all work out. No. All I could say was, oh, I just know. And I'm not focusing on us not making it. I'm focusing on where I'm headed.
Mm.
And this is something I learned that race car drivers do. There's this great book called The Art of Racing in the Rain. It's supposedly written by a dog, or at least it's written from the point of view of the dog. But his master is a race car, you know, avid race car driver, and he's not like a world champion or anything like that, but he found that he's very good at racing when it's raining, when other racers, even the really good ones, have trouble. And so his best chance of winning races was when it really rained, when everybody else gets afraid they're going to crash and they have to slow down and they have to be much more careful and everything. So that's his chance because he was really good at racing in the rain. And so, and the key to it was that apparently some great race car driver said that when you're racing, And you're coming around that sharp turn, especially in the rain or something like that, where you're afraid you're going to crash into that big wall in front of you. Don't stare at the wall. Instead, look at where you're going, not where you don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I've said, you know, for a long time to people. You have to keep your sights on where you're headed, not where you don't want to go. But our nature as human beings, our instinct is we look at and stare at what we don't like or what we don't want. We're afraid of something, we're going to stare at it. You know, if there's a rabid dog snarling and snarfing in front of you, you're not going to turn your back on that dog. You're going to stare at that dog. And so a friend of mine who was an incredible faith healer and a psychic surgeon, we were getting ready to do a fire walk, and she was telling people, she said, did you ever notice we don't look at, you know, we always look at what we're afraid of, we don't turn away from it. And she said, why don't you try that? Put the fire to behind you and don't stare at it. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. So I, when they were making the huge bonfire to get ready for the fire walk, while it's still burning, I mean, burning like the flames were at least 1.5 to 2 stories high. And so I stood as close as I could to the fire with my back turned to the fire. And I was just enjoying, I know there's a fire, a blazing fire behind me. And I can feel the heat and the crackle, hear the crackling and everything. But I thought, yes, you know, I don't have to stare at it. I'm looking at where I'm going. And not where I don't want to go. And next thing, this huge flame, I'm looking at a line of people facing toward the fire, bonfire, from a distance. They're about 50 feet away from me. And I see them talking and looking at the great bonfire from the distance. And I'm standing in front. All of a sudden, I see this look of horror in everybody's face. And at the moment, I have the thought of, I wonder why they're making that face looking towards me.
What's going on?
And next thing, I'm swept up in this wave of flame that came over my head And in front of me, to where I couldn't see anything, I was wrapped in this flame for a moment. And that flame recedes, and as it recedes, it touches my, you know, top of my head and stuff. And I can feel the singeing of my eyelashes and my eyebrows and some, a few hairs. And I can smell the, you know, the bad smell of the burning hair. And one arm of this flame went right across and just caressed my whole neck on the way back. And then the flame was behind me again. And I thought, wow, that was something. And I said, well, I'm not on fire. But I thought I'd better go check. And as I'm walking toward the bathroom to go look in the mirror and to see how much of my hair got singed and everything, as I'm passing those same people, they look at me and go, oh, my God. And I thought, gee, what do they see that I don't see? And so when I got to the mirror and I look at my throat, and there's like an inch and a half swath of complete burn across my throat from one side to the other, and it was already kind of blistering, and it was about maybe an eighth to a quarter of an inch thick, all you know, burnt.
That's pretty intense, yeah.
And I'm going, whoa, that's quite a burn. So that got me a whole new thought of, okay, let me go meditate with the fire now. And as the fire came down, it's starting to turn to coals later on. I'm sitting by the coals before we did our walk, and I asked the fire, are you going to burn me if I walk across you tonight? And the fire immediately responded, of course, that's my purpose. And I said, well, you know, you ask a dumb question, you get a dumb answer.
Yeah, of course,
what
am
I thinking? Of course, it's the purpose of fire to burn. So then I thought, I have to come up with a different... I can't walk across this fire being afraid of being burnt. I have to make peace with the fire. And I said, okay, what question do I ask to be able to walk across the fire without my feet burning or without any part of my body burning? And so then I came up with, okay, the purpose of fire is to burn. What would I like the fire to burn in me instead of my flesh? And I realized, oh, I'm sure I have some unconscious resistance and fear inside of me somewhere. And so I would like the fire to burn all of that. Mm. And I asked, and I asked God, if you will, and said, would it be okay if I, when I walk across the fire, to have the fire burn all that is, you know, fear or resistance within me, instead of burning my legs and feet and whatever, body parts? And I get a sense of yes. And so when I walked across, that's exactly what happened. And by the time I finished walking across the coals that evening, I went back to the mirror, and that really angry welt across my throat was completely gone.
Mm,
and it was like baby skin, very softer than it was before. And so so that's kind of, you know, we have to ask the right question. When we're running a business, when we're living our lives, we have to ask the right question that comes from who we are, that comes from the eternal, not the temporary. And this is part of why I feel that our society, our world is in the kind of situation it's been in for a long time. A lot of the wars and toxicity, pollution, everything that we find that is, quote, wrong with the world, is because we've been living more day-to-day, kind of, you know, not really coming from the place of the eternal. We're looking at, how do we get by this disaster? How do we get by, you know, get beyond this point of pain? How do we get by? How do we make it through? Instead of, how do we live without limits? How do we live without conditions? How do we live eternally? I find that most people are afraid of living forever. And this is part of what brings about death. We want to get away from things. We want to get away from pain. We want to get away from unpleasantness. We want to get away from a lot of things in life. And so
we'll dump this body.
Yes, yeah. And so it's either, you know, in some ways, slow suicide or a quick one. But when you do that, you always come back.
Yeah.
You do it again.
Really can't get away from it, can you?
No, you can't get away from eternal life. You can't get away from yourself, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the first things I learned from my actual death experiences is I'm never going to get away from it all. So then that doesn't mean that I don't have an experience, sometimes excruciating pain, let's say. And when I go through that, I have to bring myself to that place of, instead of trying to run away from that pain, trying to beg and plead, you know, whether pleading with God or begging and pleading with a medicine or whatever, to get rid of it, first and foremost, I have to look within myself and go, oh, okay, look at the parts of me that's really running for the hills. And I have to let that go. I have to find out, okay, can I love this too? Because
so instead of running away,
exactly,
really
because running away means you're dividing yourself. Running away means you're leaving part of yourself in favor of another part of yourself. So living a heart-centered life means you're whole. You're coming from a place of limitlessness. You're coming from a place that has no beginning and no end. It's coming from a place of forever. And so the decisions we make coming from that place has to be a forever decision. It has to be not temporary, but a forever decision.
And I have a question on kind of piggybacking
sure.
on that. You said in business or in life, you know, we need to ask the right question and
yes.
Asking how we can live eternally. And I'm wondering, would also the question be how can we serve? And that seems like I'm just thinking for myself and my business and my life, the question for me would be how can I serve? Is there anything more? Is that about what you'd say or is there something else to that question we're asking ourselves?
Yes, that's a good question to start. But don't make the service separate from you. See, a lot of times when we're asking questions in terms of how to serve or how to do even good, we have a tendency to separate ourselves from the question, separate ourselves from what are we to do. So we're here, and then we don't know what to do or how to do it, so we put the answer to how to do it out there, and we go, okay, I have to figure out how to do it in order so that I can do that. That divides us. And then once we're divided, we're not centered in the heart anymore. We're not soul-centered. We're centered in the world. We're centered where all divisions exist. And so then the question of, yes, I understand what you're asking in terms of how do I serve. The first question after that is okay, am I in, again, back to effort. Am I trying to serve? If I'm trying to serve, I'm not going to serve.
That's good. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and what the serving really means is more fundamental is sharing, right? So then you might ask the question, how do I share? Well, the only thing I'm going to share is what I have in abundance. And when I have in abundance, I naturally share. I can't contain it. It's not how. For example, if you were good at baking cookies and you baked 12 dozen cookies, well, and obviously you're not going to eat it all by yourself. So
we hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're the cookie monster.
Yeah. Right. Not one sitting anyway. Right.
And so once you make, you might have not been thinking or whatever, you just made a ton of it, and you go, oh, this smells great, and you have a couple of them, oh, this is really great, but obviously I'm not going to eat it all, and so the next thing you're going to do is you put some on a plate and you call up your friends or you take it to the neighbor or whatever. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to share a bunch of cookies you made. But then, let's say you have so many, you just can't give it away fast enough.
Hmm.
And then you might just go, okay, who else wants to give these cookies out? You know, maybe I can give it to a school. Maybe I can give it to a homeless shelter. Whatever, you start to have new ideas. But you're just asking questions of, you know, it's not the how do I share per se. It's I'm sharing already. Now, who wants it? Who can receive this? Who would benefit from my cookies? And so then as you start to ask those questions, which maybe before that you didn't ask because you didn't have the cookies, you didn't know you had the cookies. So the first thing to find out about serving is what do you have in abundance in you now to share? And you might find at first it's not a product. You don't have a company or a factory or anything. Maybe it's not a product. But you just have this longing to be of service. Part of why you're asking that question of how do I service is you've always had this longing to serve, to be of benefit, right? Mm-hmm. To serve means also to be of benefit to others. And so you have this natural inclination inside that keeps on coming up saying, I got to give something. I have to offer something of value, of benefit. But if you look at yourself and you don't find that, well, gee, I don't have this or I don't have that, and you compare yourself with whatever's out in the world or other people, and you go, well, I'm not as this as that person, or I don't have as much of this as the other company or whatever, then you're chopping down everything. But instead, if you look at what is it that I do have right now, not tomorrow, not after I make a lot of money, not after I succeed, not after, you know, whatever, but right now, what do I have? And as you ask that question, you start to notice you have. And again, it might not have materialized into form yet, but you have the energy. And you have the inspiration to share. And so with that, then you start to tap into your creativity and your imagination. And if you don't try to, you know, struggle with it, and you make it fun, and you just go, oh, hey, let's try this. It may or may not work. And then let's try that. That's all I ever do is I don't know if it's going to work for sure. So I'll try it out. And sometimes it doesn't go very far, and sometimes it takes off like a forest fire.
And well, that's great. Thank you so much. That's really wonderful. I feel like my space is really opening up and just feeling more creative and abundant. And, like, of course, we just have a whole bunch of really delicious cookies in us, you know, and we need to find the people who want those delicious cookies.
Exactly. And not one more thing is not only people who want them or who need them, but people who can have them, people who can receive. Because that's the other mistake that a lot of people in business or just in regular life who have a lot to offer, they're going to attract. If you have a lot of something to offer, you're going to attract the people who need it, who want it. But they're not always going to be able to receive it. And that's the key to the success, is if you're serving, if you're sharing and offering what you have in abundance to those who not only need it or want it, but who can also receive it, then you will succeed. If you try to give it to people who want it or need it, but they can't have it, they're not in a place to be able to receive it, then it's going to backfire on you. Anytime we give something of value to someone who can't have it, who can't receive it, who's afraid of it, who's jealous of it, who wants it so bad, but they can't allow themselves to receive it, they have to take it. So anybody who steals, they can't have what they're stealing.
Okay. Mm. And anybody, right, that makes sense, yeah.
anybody
they can't
who,
really benefit from it if they're
exactly,
stealing it.
Yeah, it goes down
yeah.
the drain. And anybody who's very demanding, they can't really have what they're demanding. So you'll find that anyone who can have something that you're offering them will appreciate what you offer.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I know it's getting close to the 45-minute mark, and this is amazing. I personally have learned so much, and I know that I love that you're speaking about really connecting spirit and heart and business and limitlessness. And I mean, I don't hear enough of that connection. So I really appreciate you speaking to all that and enlightening all of us listening. Was there any last thing you wanted to say?
Well, yes. If people are interested, they can come to my seminar. All day. I'm going to be teaching 2 all-day seminars in Longmont, Colorado, January 21st, Saturday, and January 22nd, Sunday. You could come to both days or either day. And the topic, the overall theme for the whole weekend is making the greatest journey of your life from your head and body to your heart and soul. Saturday.
Perfect. Topic?
The topic, yeah, the Saturday topic is going to be the path from your heart to your from your head to your heart is inward, spiritual tools and practices to live in and from your center. And Sunday's topic is spiritual tools and practices for managing your greatest challenges in making your shift from a body-based intellectual life into fully living as an intuitive soul. It's 10 o'clock in the morning till 5 in the afternoon each day.
Oh, that's perfect. I'm so excited. I'll be there, and I
Great.
Hope anybody else that's listening can join.
And if
and
they
so
would
we,
like to, the phone number they can
it.
Call is
oh, good. Yeah.
To register is 530-926-2650. That's 530-926-2650.
Great. And then there's information also at michaeltamora.com?
That's correct.
Is that right? Okay. And then in case people are listening to this after the 22nd of January, I know that you talk and travel and teach endlessly, so I hope they go to michaeltamora.com and check out, you know, all the things that you have coming up. And you do a lot of teleseminars too, don't you?
Yes, I do teleseminars probably 2-3 a month usually.
Oh, great.
And
okay.
Again, they can check our website. Tamura is T-A-M-U-R-A, michaeltamura.com, and or call our office and find out when the teleseminars are going to be.
Okay, so no matter where you're at, you can listen to more of Michael's teachings.
That's correct.
So wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Yes, likewise. I'll be seeing you.
Okay, wonderful. Have a great day. Thanks,
All
everybody.
Right.
And thanks for listening to the Courageous Heart interview series. And please join us for the rest of the series. We're just getting going, so please enjoy. Thank you. Bye-bye.